Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Ask a tennis fan what they'll remember about this year's play at Wimbledon. Was it the final between Roger Federer and Andy Roddick, or that marathon contest between Lindsay Davenport and Venus Williams? Now, call me biased, but I think the women outplayed the men this year in terms of athleticism, guts, and endurance. If we take this observation back in history, it's easy to make the case that neither Davenport nor Williams might have reached that skill level or public profile without the Title IX legislation that was passed before either one of them was born. Not so much that Title IX got women into tennis, they'd long competed at the professional level, but Title IX's given credit for expanding opportunities for women in sports, in soccer and in basketball. This summer, that Title IX legislation is 33 years old. And guess what? What was controversial back in 1972 remains controversial today. In colleges across the U.S., men's teams say that because of Title IX, they continue to lose athletes and lose their competitive edge. Now, the Bush administration is proposing a change that might make it easier for colleges to decide how to apply the gender balancing of Title IX. This hour, we'll talk about what's being suggested, and we'd like to know from you if it is time to lighten up on the enforcement of Title IX. Did you benefit from the legislation? Has it largely achieved its aim? Is it time now to relax, or does it need to be enforced as strictly as ever? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm starting today with Karen Blumenthal. She is a senior editor for The Wall Street Journal, author of a new book called Let Me Play, the story of Title IX, the law that changed the future of girls in America. Karen's joining us from a studio in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
I'm wondering if you wrote this book in part because you were thinking that maybe the history or the legacy of Title IX is getting a little bit lost in the mists of time.
Well, a little bit, but I wrote this book because I think for a lot of middle-aged women, this is our story. We grew up at a time when we didn't have a chance to play. A lot of us grew up at a time when admissions for women to colleges and professional schools were restricted by quotas. Some of us, like me, were dying to play basketball, but there was no opportunity. I happen to have two teenage daughters, so I know a lot of young girls, and I thought it was very important for them to know where we have come and to understand that what they have today, they didn't always have.
I got a bit of a chuckle out of the question that you write about people saying to you, well, gee, Karen, if you're all about Title IX, are your daughters basketball players or baseball players? What are they doing?
Well, you know, I had this dream that I would get to, you know, watch my kids play basketball. And they did play basketball for a little while and soccer and volleyball. But to my complete surprise, they chose ballet as their physical activity. But that doesn't mean that as a family we don't love sports and spend a lot of time watching them and talking about them.
The point is that they had that choice to make, right?
Absolutely, that they had a choice and a chance. And to me, that makes all the difference.
Can I get you to bring us right ahead to what this current debate is now over the way that schools would make the determination if they're matching what's required of them under Title IX? Start me off, if you would, with a simple, what's the rule that athletic directors need to have sort of penciled on their on the top of their computer in terms of conforming to Title IX?
Well, unfortunately, it's a little complicated, but let me walk you through it. In 1979, the government adopted what's known as a three-prong test, and basically there's just three ways you can meet Title IX, and you can comply with Title IX by meeting any one of these three. The first one is a numbers test, and it says, if 55% of your students are female, then 55% of your athletic spots, roughly, should be female. This is a very tough test, partly because today 57% of undergraduates are female.
Right.
So it's become a very tough test. That wasn't true in 1979 when women were still the minority. The second test, which also complies with Title IX, says, are you showing increasing opportunities for the underserved or for the female student body?
Athletic opportunities.
Athletic opportunities,
right.
Correct. And the third test is, are you meeting the needs and interests of those female students in athletics? And that's, you know, so you go from a kind of hard and fast sort of numbers test, but one that's hard to meet, to one to a question that's sort of mushy and hard to get your arms around.
And the schools need to make the case that they are matching or they're meeting the standards set by one of those three. Is that right?
Right. Correct. They have to meet one of those three tests. But how do you meet the needs and interests? What the Department of Education did in March was clarify that rule. It's done. It's not a proposal. It's done. That said, you can show that you're meeting the needs and interests of your female students in athletics through a survey. That's all you have to do. In the past, a survey was one thing that you had to do. You might also have to look at, say, what the interests were of your applicants or of students who are interested in your school, or look more broadly at what women were interested in. So they've changed it to say you can do a survey, and in fact, you can do it by email.
Okay, but what's wrong if you were to send an email to every woman in the freshman class of a college and say, what sports do you want to play? Which, you know, we could offer this and this and this. What would you like to do? What's wrong with that?
The question is, first of all, how many people will respond to a survey? How many people do you need to respond to a survey? There's lots of questions about how this will come about. I think from one point of view, it's perceived as a cop-out, as an easy way out to say, well, we're meeting the needs and interests. But I think there's another side, too, which is it's kind of risky. If you have a club softball team and they're dying to be varsity, and you offer this survey and everybody on the club softball team and 20 of their best softball-playing friends all respond, then is the school committed to providing a softball team? It's not clear how this will actually play out, but it's perceived as something that makes the rule just a little too easy to meet.
Meaning that it would be a little bit easier for an athletic director to say, hey, we sent out the email, and yes, in fact, we're going to add 10 people to the roster of the men's soccer team and not necessarily add 10 women to the roster of the women's soccer team.
Well, the email will go, it will focus on the underserved or on the female population because that's the lesser one. So unfortunately, I don't think it doesn't apply to the men. It applies to the group that's perceived as not served as well. So it would apply to the women. And the assumption is, of course, if there's already a team, if there's already a varsity team, that there's interest because
right.
There's players. So, but if people don't respond, then it's presumed that there's no interest. What's really not clear is how many people have to respond. You have to show that they're competent, capable of playing at a varsity level.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like a lesser standard than, say, showing increasing opportunities.
Let me bring Eric Pearson in at this point. Eric's executive director of the College Sports Council, and he's joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for including the College Sports Council in this discussion.
I wanted to bring you in here because when Karen said it doesn't really include the men, I thought to myself, well, you'd probably argue with that. Anything here that attempts the kind of gender balancing, at least based on what I've read and heard from critics, does in fact include the men every time it makes a change affecting the women. Where are you at with that?
Well, first of all, Dick, I'd just like to point out that the College Sports Council fully supports Title IX. We think it's a great law. And the only issue that we take contention with is the proportionality prong of enforcement. It's only in the regulations that we're working to try to improve the law so it continues to protect women without harming men. But in response to your question about the surveys, one clarification I'd like to make on Karen's comments is that this is not an email spam type thing. The survey is intended to be part of a required process, like registering for classes. So every student will see that option to take part in the survey. But regarding whether it affects boys, boys are not required to participate in that survey, or I should say the schools aren't required to measure the interest of boys. And
right.
At the College Sports Council, we say, please, let us participate. Let us demonstrate our interest because we know there are many men's teams, men's club teams that would love to have an opportunity to compete on a varsity level. A lot of them are self-funded, so it's not a funding matter. And it certainly doesn't take away from women to give these self-funded teams an opportunity to play.
And yet, the criticism that the College Sports Council and other people have about the way that Title IX is enforced is that it does put pressure on male athletes or the athletic director for men to try and either limit teams or cut teams. Are you saying that when we're talking about this new aspect of this law, this new way of surveying it, that doesn't really change anything, that the issues that people have had with Title IX all along remain the same?
Well, in the past, since 1996, proportionality has been seen as the safe harbor. So schools, if they work towards proportionality, they know that they're safe. They can't be sued. They can't get in trouble with the Office of Civil Rights in an investigation. And it really has governed the way that these administrators look at Title IX. They say, are we proportionate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. then we can go forward from there. And we've said, well, let's give a little more flexibility to the law so these administrators can continue to accommodate interests of the women, support the female athletes, give them good facilities, good coaching, and fully fund their teams, but don't take away from the men. And what has happened is they've created a quota system as a result of this strict proportionality compliance.
We're coming up to a break here, and I want to just get a final word from Karen Blumenthal on what really is at risk here with this change, Karen.
Well, the concern is that women's interests, it's very hard to know what women really are interested in if they haven't had full opportunities. And so the question is, are you going to sort of cut off interest before you give people a chance to see what they can really do? It's a complex issue, but that's the worry.
Is it your worry as well?
You know, my concern is that people have an opportunity to play, both boys and girls. That's the goal of Title IX, is that everyone has an opportunity. How it plays out, luckily, is a good topic for policymakers. But the truth is that the Department of Education says in its own documents that in most cases, people don't use the number standard because they can't. In most cases, it's the second and the third prong that are used to show that people comply with Title IX.
All right. In connection, listen, how it plays out is also a good topic for our conversation this hour. We'd like to hear from you on this change to Title IX. Did you benefit from the legislation in your own experience? Has the legislation then achieved its aim? Is it time for this kind of fine tuning? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Sorry about that. I missed my microphone. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, we're talking about Title IX. Karen Blumenthal is with us. She's author of a new book called Let Me Play, The Story of Title IX, The Law That Changed the Future of Girls in America. Eric Pearson is also with us. He's executive director of the College Sports Council. And we're going to invite Benita Fitzgerald Mosley to join us now. She is president of Women in Cable and Telecommunications. But you'll probably know her better for winning a gold medal in the 100-meter hurdles in the 1984 Olympics. Benita, it's nice to have you joining us on the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Would you say that Title IX was key in pushing you athletically to reach that Olympic level?
Certainly. I mean, without it, I don't think the schools in Prince William County, Virginia, where I grew up, would have had as many opportunities for me to play sports as they did in middle school and high school. Title IX was passed about the time I entered middle school, and I was among, you know, the first girls to get a college scholarship, went to the University of Tennessee, got a degree in engineering, which is, of course, a male-dominated field, had a part of my career as an engineer, part of my career in sports administration and marketing, which is also part of a male-dominated field. So I've had great benefits, both educationally, career-wise, and, of course, ultimately winning the gold medal.
I wanted to ask you about the career effect, though, if you could help us out a little bit with that, because you are now a successful businesswoman, and I'm wondering what kind of a straight line you draw between your success after sports to the effect that Title IX had on you and other young women of your age.
I think the lessons I learned in sports have permeated my life. And really, I call Title IX and my participation in sports the gift that has kept on giving. I've just derived so many benefits. I talked about a free education. I talked about the career opportunities. But some of the more intrinsic things are things like setting high goals and high standards for myself, you know, not being afraid to take risks. And also, when I come over a hurdle or an obstacle in my life, I'm just find a way to get over it, around it, under it somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think I've had several different career changes. And with each one, one might look and say, okay, so you have an engineering degree. How does that qualify you to, you know, run a part of the region for Special Olympics International or manage sports marketing sponsorships for the Atlanta Committee for Olympic Games or run an Olympic Training Center or now head up a major organization in the cable television industry? You know, there's the only thing that kind of goes from one career change to another as I became more and more successful was that I wasn't afraid to take risks. When someone gave me an opportunity, I was able and willing to take advantage of it. And that, I think, is specifically derived from being an athlete and also, of course, being a hurdler, taking risks every day.
This hour on the program, of course, we're talking about an adjustment in the way that Title IX is seen. Some of its strongest supporters see that might, in fact, water down Title IX a little
bit.
Other people are looking at it as something that, in fact, is a kind of a logical evolution here. Benita, have you looked carefully at this? Have you got a thought about that?
Certainly, I do, and I agree with Karen and Eric that I think all of us on the phone feel the same way, that we want both boys and girls, men and women, to have equal access and opportunities to participate in sports at the high school and college levels. However, you know, Title IX has been a law that has increased high school participation of girls 875% since its inception, and college is at 437%. So we've seen a huge increase, and I think at the beginning of Title IX, you know, many of its critics were worried, well, girls just aren't as interested in playing sports as boys are. And what we've seen is if you build it, they will come. If you provide the opportunities, girls and women will participate. And so I was recruited by, you know, 60, 70 schools all across the country, Brown University, you know, Harvard, UCLA, University of Colorado, University of Texas. I ended up going to the University of Tennessee. And I had a dual experience as an engineering student and as an athlete. So when I was looking at colleges and universities with my family, my father happened to be my guidance counselor at my high school, and we were looking for both. We were looking for a great engineering program,
right,
and one that could provide me a great education, but also had to have good sports. And I remember specifically looking at Brown University at the time, and their school record was 17.8 or something. And so I had run 13 seconds in the hurdles already, and I thought, well, there's no way I can go to that school because they don't have the appropriate...
Nobody was going to push you athletically.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so I say that to say that girls and boys that who are athletes are going to look for schools based upon the opportunities that they will extend to them. And so if I looked at University of Tennessee and they did not offer a women's track team, although they wanted me to come for their engineering school, I wouldn't have gone. And so this really clarification of the third prong of Title IX really goes to something, this survey that's going to go to the general student body. And we know that in most surveys, usually as a rule of thumb, about 20% of the people really respond. And what it says in this clarification is that the people, the 80% that don't respond, they will consider that non-interest. Would it be, you know, true on the flip side? If you ask the question, are you not interested, and no one responded, does that mean that they are? And so I think the survey itself is flawed. I think the fact that you're going to the general student body, of which those people, I know I was an engineering student, they came to go to engineering. They did not come to run track.
Let me, if I can, widen this out and include some of our callers in the conversation. We're getting a bunch of people who want to join us. We're going first to Cary, North Carolina. Warren is on the line. Hi, Warren.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. Tell me what your thoughts are about Title IX.
Well, I guess I had two things. One, on the conversation of high school versus college, I think they need to be somewhat separated in that, you know, high school or even elementary schools, there is the issue of giving them opportunity to figure out do they like to play the sport or not.
Yeah.
But at the college level, it's been my experience that most people who play at the college level played before. So it's not really an issue of are they interested in the sport. You know, it's can they play.
Yeah.
And then I guess my other part of it was just somewhat covered in that if they do a survey and someone doesn't respond, is it really that important to them? And I liken that to in business when we do surveys, typically the people who respond back are passionate about the issue.
So what you're saying is that the survey could in fact cut in favor of the women. If they are keen about sports, they'll answer and they may end up further ahead?
Yes. Or either that, or at least you're getting a true representation of the people who actually care about it, as opposed to those who may have feelings one way or the other, but it's not really a big issue for them.
Benita, that's the other side of the story here, that the idea of the survey, the direct measure of the level of interest, might in fact help women out.
I agree with you on that, that is a distinct possibility. However, it is still fundamentally flawed because you're asking people who didn't choose to come to that school to play a particular sport. Now, many of people participate in intramural sports or club sports at the collegiate level and enjoy that, and many of them may, in fact, if you offered a varsity team, want to participate. But as we know, college teams hire a coach. They actively recruit years in advance athletes to come to their schools. And so the process is not, let me look at the general student body at the University of Tennessee and pluck some girls from that junior student body to find for my track team. It just doesn't happen that way.
All right. Benita, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
It's Benita Fitzgerald Mosley, winner of a gold medal in the 100-meter hurdles in the 1984 Olympics, now president of Women in Cable and Telecommunications. Back to the guests who we began with, Eric Pearson and Karen Blumenthal. Eric, let me just get some thoughts from you on now that we're sort of at the nub of this, the survey, and does it help or hurt women? What are your thoughts about what you're hearing?
Well, it's true. Times certainly have changed, haven't they, with sports. We now have a lot more opportunities for women to play sports than we did 30 years ago. In fact, there are actually over 1,000 teams, more teams for women in the NCAA than there are for men. A lot of people don't realize that. And for every sport that has an equivalent, there's just about there are more scholarships available to women than there are for men. For example, in track and field, there are about 12 scholarships allowed for men and about 20 for women. So things have really changed, and that's good. We want to have more opportunities for young people to participate in sports. I don't think any of us disagree that sports are good for kids. The question is, what do we do today? What do we do today to prevent discrimination based on gender? And that's a tough thing. And I think we have to be real careful not to generalize about, Title IX has been so great, how can we possibly touch it? Well, it has been great, and I don't think anybody's arguing over that. The issue really is just, again, it boils down to, is proportionality the only way to comply with Title IX?
Or to put it another way, and Karen, I'll invite you in on this, has Title IX achieved what its original framers had intended? Is it time to review the legislation and say, okay, how can we change it, make it better?
Dick, I'd like to just make one point. First, so Benita talks about being an engineering major, and I think one of the important things to remember about Title IX was that it opened doors across the board in schools. If she had been a student in 1970, she would not have been welcome in the engineering department. There were only a few dozen, maybe a couple of hundred engineering majors the entire country, because those doors were closed to women. So Title IX has had an impact across the board. I'd like to answer your question, but I also want to address the caller about girls playing sports. The kind of dirty word we haven't mentioned yet is football. Football provides 85. If your school plays football, they almost certainly provide. In their Division I, because not all schools provide scholarships, they provide 85 football scholarships. I went to Duke University. Annual tuition there is about $40,000 a year. It's a lot of money to provide 85 football scholarships. That's a lot of money that supports young men in college. The issues of proportionality cut to the fact that there's no female sport that gets anywhere close to 85 football scholarships. That's why you have those numbers that Eric cited about, more scholarships in track. If there's an extra scholarship in basketball, even so, you don't get to the total number. So
but are you saying, Karen, though, that until the women's basketball team has 85 scholarships for women basketball players, there won't be equality?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But what I wanted to say is that you have the landscape, you just don't have as many opportunities for women because they don't play football. So you offer more sports. I just want to explain what Eric is saying, that there's more sports for women because there's fewer opportunities in the sports they play. Does that make sense?
No, I get what you're saying. But please come to the point that I was asking you about, if we've reached a kind of level where the legislation can be revised and rethought.
I'll put the question to you that because I was writing for young people and I wanted to really raise the question. So what is equality anyway, and how do we know when we've gotten there? And I interviewed a number of people on this issue, and I thought one of the interesting answers was from Norma Cantu, who was in the Clinton administration. She says, in sports, we always change the side of the field at the half, in basketball and soccer, Because if, you know, if the goals aren't right, if the wind's blowing a certain way, that's only fair to change the sides of the field. So the question that she puts is, would men willingly change sides with women today? Would women willingly change sides with men? I think that's an important question.
Eric.
Dick, if I could comment on that.
Yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Would most men's coaches of the Olympic sports change sides with women now? Absolutely. Absolutely. There are more. They have more scholarships. They get more money. They have more resources. You look at gymnastics, and any men's gymnastics coach would gladly change roles with a women's gymnastics coach. You look at a track coach. Any track men's track coach would gladly have the opportunity to not limit their roster sizes just to compete with just to comply with proportionality. There's a practice out there that we haven't talked about here yet called roster management, which is the most common form of intentional gender-based discrimination. And it basically is a squad quota where the men's teams are forced to limit their squad sizes just to comply with proportionality. The women's coaches don't like this practice. It doesn't benefit them. The men's coaches don't like the practice because it doesn't allow them to develop athletes that are late bloomers. There's a lot that we have to talk about. If we're going to talk about Title IX.
Let me stop you if I can, Eric, because we've got with us on the line from Boston, Leslie. Leslie is head of the women's track team at Boston University. Leslie, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you.
Would you trade places with your male counterpart?
Well, not right now because they just fired him. actually, I think if you I'm speaking from my sport, which is track and field.
Yeah.
And one of the big issues I see in New England is the lack of female coaches in track and field. I know I can name off a bunch of schools who right now are being headed up by men, and that would be Harvard, Northeastern, BC, New Hampshire.
What's the point here, Leslie, that
women coaches, I think, need to be protected by Title IX. And I think while Title IX has had a phenomenal impact for the athletes, which is great, it hasn't caught up yet in the coaching realm for female coaches.
But let me bring you to the point about the athletes, if I can, and that is, do you think that Title IX has largely achieved the purpose that it was set out to achieve, or does it need to be kept in place and basically untouched for what it contributes to women athletes?
If you're talking about for women athletes, I think it has been largely achieved. I know I grew up and I competed in sports, and I got a full scholarship for track and field. I was very lucky, and I had all that available to me, like Benita, and I think it really has achieved it. But I think if we let down our guard, I think what's going to happen is it could go the other way, and I don't think we have caught up with the female in all aspects of the sport.
And when someone on the male side of sports at BU says, we can't maintain, I don't know any of the specifics, but I know some of the general criticisms, we can't maintain a wrestling team, we can't bring as many male gymnasts in on scholarship as we'd like to be competitive. What do you say to those kind of complaints, though, Leslie?
I would say I do feel bad for them, but that's an administrative decision, and it's not. It shouldn't affect female athletes. That administrators have decided that they don't want to add more sports. That's the reason why those other sports are being cut. Not because they should be, but because administrators have made that decision.
Eric, I need just a sort of 25-second answer from you because we're coming up to a break here, that this can
Title
be solved
IX.
With better administration, not Title IX.
Well, unfortunately, the caller's right that Title IX is more about limiting opportunities for men now than adding opportunities for women.
Connection listeners, do you see it that way? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. It has long been suggested that whenever you give anything to women, you know, in the athletic department of a given college, then have to take something away from men. Are you someone who sees that you may have lost something to Title IX, or someone who sees that they may have gained something from Title IX? And looking at it as we are on about its 33rd birthday, is it time? Is it a reasonable time to say, okay, let's take another look at the legislation. Let's maybe lighten it up a little bit and let the athletic directors and the coaches make the decisions rather than legislating those upon them. 1-800-423-TALK is our number. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. No question in anybody's mind that Title IX has profoundly affected the way that women participate, not only in sports, but in other opportunities provided for them at college. The change has been dramatic over the past three decades. When we look at it at this point, is it reasonable to say that maybe Title IX has achieved its purpose and there's an opportunity here, certainly that comes from the administration, to allow the schools a little bit more latitude in making those decisions themselves? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Karen Blumenthal, if I can just come back to you with the question that we ended with prior to the break, the argument that giving something to girls has always meant taking something away from boy athletes. Has that been true? Is it still true? What do you think?
No, actually, it's not true. About 85% of all schools have been able to provide expanding opportunities for women without taking anything from men. They've raised fees for the student body and that kind of thing. I'd like to put a question to Eric, if I may, because this is an issue that came up in my research that puzzles me. One of the major issues is that we're not attracting our young men to college. If the student body is 57% female at the University of North Carolina, it's roughly 60%, then that makes this numbers test very difficult to meet. I'm wondering why the people who are really concerned about men's sports aren't also really concerned about where the young men are and why
we
someone
are concerned.
At least
boy,
is
very
not
concerned.
Doing something and to bring young men to college. So I'd like to hear more about that.
That's something I talk about all the time. You know, especially it's the problem with the disparity between genders and enrollment is even worse at the historically black colleges. You know, the general population, we have about 55 approaching 60% women in the undergraduate student body. But in the historically black colleges, that disparity is almost double. It's almost like 70% to 30%. It's approaching 70%. But we have a crisis. We do have a crisis when it comes to motivating our young men to go to college. You know, sports are one way that people can get motivated to go to college, and we're taking away that as a tool to motivate young African Americans to go on to college. If we want to cut back football scholarships, boy, football is the biggest affirmative action program we have going. They give more scholarships to minority athletes than any other sport. So we're very concerned about it. We speak about it frequently, and I'm really glad that you brought that up.
But I'd like to answer that, you know, roughly 5% of all high school athletes actually get to play sports in college. So I think maybe we've cheated the guys by telling them the reason to go to college is to play sports. That's not the reason to go to college. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, but hardly, you know, only 5%
of
students
right.
get
the,
to do
the reason,
that.
Yeah, the reason to go
I
to
mean,
college.
I, you know, just what, yeah. Are you all doing something or is someone doing something to try and attract more of our young men?
It's a concern of ours, and we talk about it at every opportunity, and you certainly have given us that opportunity. Thanks for asking that question. It's a problem. And when you have a young kid and you've coached young kids, they have the ability to focus on very few things. And you have to find things that motivate them. And coaches are able to reach out to these young kids and motivate them and put them on a track that will lead them towards college. Now, obviously, going to college, the purpose of going to college is not to play sports, is to get an education and to educate yourself and become a professional and be successful in life. But there's a track that you can put a young person on, and a productive track. And sports are one of those many tracks, like getting involved in the arts or drama.
Trouble is,
I
they don't give too many scholarships for the kid
but that's
in
okay.
the fine
you
arts
know,
program. But no, but it's history that you're dealing with, right?
The majority of athletes don't get scholarships. They go to schools like Division III schools, don't offer scholarships.
But a lot of athletes are inspired to stay with the sports in the hopes of getting a scholarship.
True.
I mean, it is an inspiring aspect of this.
I want to, if I can, go to
callers. We have so many people, Eric, who want to join us. It would be a shame not to hear from them. Let's go next to Boston. Bob's on the line. Bob, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that anytime you have a program like Title IX that in some way, shape, or form results in taking away male sports, the whole issue has to be revisited.
You have some experience with this yourself?
I did. I played baseball at Providence College, and baseball was Providence's oldest and most successful program. And back in 96, 98, around that time period, to stay in compliance with Title IX, there was 60-40% student population, 60% female, 40% male, and to stay compliant with Title IX, they had to either add 3 female sports or drop 3 male sports. And they chose the latter. They dropped baseball, and it had the most amount of scholarships and also the most amount of bodies, rather than adding the 3 female sports.
And what was their alternative in your view, Bob? What should they have been looking at instead of that?
Well, they virtually, I don't know what their alternative was, because they offered every female sport under the sun. I mean, for every male sport, there was a female equivalent. Basketball, hockey, baseball, there was softball, swimming, everything, track and field. I don't know what the alternative was, but this is part of that, I think, gray area that really needs to be revisited, where schools have lost programs because of just the rhetoric that goes along with it.
I guess I'm just wondering, Bob, if the school had a little bit more room to move on this issue, if they weren't either feeling or saying that they were feeling really constrained by Title IX. Do you think that there could have been some accommodation found, or do you think that if the school had the freedom to move back then, I'd be talking to, you know, a woman who was at Providence College who felt that she missed out on the opportunity to play. Do you know what I'm saying here?
But the thing is, at Providence College, the females don't have, they're not missing any opportunities.
Karen, what are you thinking as you listen in?
Well, you know, it sounds like they made a bad administrative choice. I think schools make decisions for lots of reasons. They rarely make them simply on a numbers game. They often are looking at the budget, and they're looking at dollars that have to be spent. And it's much easier not to spend dollars than it is to find ways to find new dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, as a result, there are a lot of bad decisions that are made. And when I did my research, I didn't interview a single advocate or woman athlete or athletic director who said they thought that there should be opportunities taken away from men. It is absolutely not something that anyone wants. And in fact, in this clarification and in a clarification 2 years ago, the Department of Education has encouraged colleges and universities not to do that. But they're looking at a lot of things, like the cost of a basketball team or the cost of a football team, and all those things go into it together.
But doesn't this open up a bigger can of worms, though, as far as bigger programs, like, say, Michigan or Notre Dame, where their academic population might start to be skewed a little bit more to where they can accommodate some of these athletic programs?
Well, sure, but that's why there's 3 tests. There's not just one test, and there's not just a quota test. And it's important to remember, I've read a lot of court rulings on this, and every one of them will walk through all 3 tests. So, it doesn't have to be just quotas.
It's interesting, though, Eric, just when you read through articles that describe controversy that Title IX has prompted over recent decades, how much anger there is there from male athletes and coaches and athletic directors who say, I don't know what it was, but we lost a program that was really important to us.
It's unfortunate. It really is, because I think we can achieve a middle ground on this. I think that the law is good. It's just poorly regulated.
What about the case that the law is good and the schools could do a better job of administering it, so wrestling programs and men's gymnastics programs aren't being cut, that it in fact could be corrected administratively rather than by athletic directors throwing up their nines and saying, darn old Title IX?
Schools are afraid of being sued, and primarily what holds up in court is proportionality. A judge will look and say, is this school proportionate? Are they providing the equivalent number of opportunities for female athletes as to their undergraduate student body? And that's really what has governed Title IX compliance in the last 10 years, since really since 1996, since the Clinton clarification, and also since the Brown court case, the Cohen v. Brown case in 1995, where Brown tried to measure interest, and they tried to use that in defense, and the court just threw it out, said, we don't recognize your survey. And that's why we're hoping that this new survey might provide some flexibility, where a school can say, hey, we did the survey that was recommended by the government. And maybe that will hold up in court. So we would love to see the three prongs actually work, but they haven't.
Is that it, Karen, though? Is that whatever holds up in court? Is that the bottom line?
I read the Brown case, and Brown's argument was girls aren't as interested in sports. And the court said, well, gee, how do you know, you just cut a girls' gymnastics team, a women's gymnastics team. How can you say they're not interested when you had a team that you just eliminated? They walked through all three of those prongs in the appeals court ruling, which was the one that held in the Brown case. There are three prongs.
1-800-423-8255 to Louisville, Kentucky for our next call. Ben's with us. Hello, Ben.
Hello there. Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Hey, listen, I'm quite passionate about this. I've got a daughter that's going into college next year that had so many opportunities to go to handfuls of college because of sports that she would not have had not been for Title IX.
What's her sport, Ben?
She was a soccer player.
Yeah.
And just the number of scholarship opportunities. And the one thing that the gentleman that Eric keeps talking about is the number of female scholarships. There's a lot of scholarships out there, but there are very few full rides. There's a lot of partial scholarships. You got to look at the dollars that are being spent and not just the number of scholarships, how those scholarship dollars are divided. But Title IX is not a chance. Now's not the time to back off of it and to you tweak it, but don't rethink it. And the survey is a very poor, as Karen has showed out several times, very poor way to go with it. Because there's sports now for girls. You watch the field hockey, you look at lacrosse, that if somebody asked a girl if she wanted to play field hockey or lacrosse 5 years ago, you would have gotten no participation. Now you go out and there's 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds every Saturday, just like soccer grew. Girls playing field hockey and lacrosse, they won't show up on a survey, but you watch the growth as it's going right now of youth sports.
So what you're saying, Ben, is that the sport, in fact, needs to exist and offer itself as an opportunity before anybody is likely to register an interest in that sport, right?
Exactly. And there's still, we've got so many other serious issues on the plate. The Title IX, it's working. We need to keep it working because there's still so much every chance we get, as I see with youth sports and girls and high schools, that every chance they get a chance to cut something, they'll cut it way before they'll cut football. And that's just not a football parent. My son played football, and God bless, it's a great sport. But the girls' chance, every chance they'll get, they will cut it. And if we don't keep keep things going the way they are, you'll see a decline.
Am I right in guessing that your daughter's probably got a poster of Mia Hamm or Brandi Chastain on her bedroom wall?
You would never guess the level she played going into her room. And she's going to Tennessee like Benita. But her confidence that she got from sport, it just makes a parent passionate. It's like she would not be doing what she's going to be doing soon if it not been for if it hadn't been for youth sports. It was such a motivation. The work reward, the benefit of hard work and success, is she has it, the confidence.
All right. Well, wish her all the best from us, Ben. I want to thank you for your call. We're going straight ahead to Amherst, Massachusetts. Lori's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Listen, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm the athletic director at Mount Holyoke College, and I want to agree with some of the comments that are being made because as an administrator who has to make decisions every single day about the budget, we decide what sports we keep and what sports we don't. And I have male colleagues across this country that over the past 2 years when Title IX was being looked at closely by the commission, and they were concerned that they would not have anything to blame for having to maintain budgets and cut sports. Title IX provided the opportunity to do that.
I should make the point here that this is not a problem for you because Mount Holyoke is an all-women's college, right?
No, it is not. It's not an issue for me in particular. But we have 15 intercollegiate sports for women, which is a very large number of sports that we're able to offer, and we still have to deal with limited budgets like everybody else. The problem is what people don't know is that in the past 10 years, for every additional dollar spent on women's athletics, $3 have been spent on men's sports. The problem is that those dollars have been spent going particularly to men's football and men's basketball, which 67% of the budgets in men's programs at the collegiate level go to maintain those two sports, while the men's non-revenue sports get just a small percentage of what's left.
Eric, what do you think?
Well, if we had an opportunity to fund our own teams, we'd do it. And so often we've seen the Olympic sports, when a team is being threatened with termination, the alumni step forward and offer to pay for the team, and the money's refused because they feel the pressure to comply with proportionality. We would love to see the opportunity to privately fund teams. We would save a lot of programs and provide, and it doesn't take away from women athletes to do that.
Lori, tell me what you're thinking.
Well, Eric, one of the things I'd like to say to you is I'm a big proponent of men's and women's sports across the board, and the problem is nobody's talking about the fact we keep talking about men's gymnastics. I have two good friends who their sons are on scholarships at schools with gymnastics, and I support them fully. And yet 67 men's gymnastics programs have been cut in this country, but nobody talks about the 100 women's programs that have been cut over the past
years. That's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up.
I mean, we blame Title IX. We wouldn't begin to blame Title IX for the women's programs that have been cut. It's decisions by administrators of where they're going to put their dollars and what sports cost.
Lori, so if I can just ask you a question, though.
Yep.
I mean, this whole point about who cuts what, if it's all a choice of the administrators, Lori, then what difference does it make if they adjust the survey part of Title IX? Is it going to make a big difference?
Well, the courts, 9 different courts across the country over the past 15 years have ruled that surveys are not appropriate means to determine interest. And the email survey, unfortunately, what I think would be done, while Eric says it would be a regular part of the admissions process at most institutions, I'm afraid would not be done so. And my understanding of the interpretations is that is not the case, and that is not laid out specifically to be done in that way.
All right, Eric, I'm going to give you 15 seconds here to make the point that you wanted to make. It was a really tight time.
Oh, sure. The point that we're losing female gymnastics teams and female tennis teams goes to the point, again, goes back to proportionality. Those are small roster teams. There is no incentive for these administrators to keep small rosters on the women's side. They'll replace them with a large roster team. That's why we're losing female gymnastics teams and female tennis teams.
Eric, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Dick.
Eric Pearson, Executive Director of the College Sports Council. And Karen Blumenthal, I want to thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks very much.
Karen is author of a brand new book called Let Me Play, Story of Title IX, The Law That Changed the Future of Girls in America. She's also a senior editor at The Wall Street Journal. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.